Hello and welcome to Rebite number 9, a short and chewy conversation about something interesting. Today, we've got Adrianne Carter, the Face Whisperer, possibly the best job title I've ever come across, I think, thinking back. Adrianne, do you want to say hello and introduce yourself and what the Face Whisperer does?
Okay, thank you very much and thank you for inviting me. So yes, I am the Face Whisperer. Now, hopefully as we go through our chat today, it'll become really obvious why I'm the Face Whisperer, but I'm a specialist in facial expressions, emotions and behaviour. So I help brands, businesses, individuals really up their communication skills. One of my key focuses is making sure that advertising content where people are included really resonates with the audience, because it's such a big opportunity and most of the time brands are missing that opportunity. So I'm quite passionate about people and faces and behavior.
That's really good. So we met, I can't remember if it was this year or last year, through a leadership group that I was part of, and Adrianne came to do a workshop and found it super interesting. And I've kind of read her posts with eager anticipation whenever they popped up. But I thought it was time to have a chat, really, because as we record this, if you're listening in the future, it's mid-November of 2020. The UK, as we're in, because I know some of you are in the States. We're in second lockdown now. And we've been living in this little box, a portrait-sized window on Zoom or Teams or whatever your video call thing of choice is, for about 8 months. And there's still a bunch of people who are not very good at it. When you've only got a portrait size thing, which is head and shoulders, to convey excitement and energy and enthusiasm and the clarity of your communication, right? It needs to be more important. Your face is the face of your company, weirdly now. So what do you think of that? Is there any kind of tips? What have you seen that's been disastrous or uber good over the last few months?
So I knew this beforehand, but what's become really obvious now is how uncomfortable people are on video. It's almost like the camera is stealing their soul. And I think that's what leads to the level of discomfort. And you'll see it on people's faces. That, you know, there's lots of this going on.
Yes.
That's the nose wrinkling of disgust, dislike. And oftentimes it's inwardly focused. It's not, I don't like what you're saying, I don't like you. It's not that. It's like, I really hate this. I really hate being on video. Now, I'm not sure why. That's something I've always been comfortable with. But I've got a really good friend who's an expert, top 10 in the world, and he will not go on video. So he's doing television interviews with no video. Like, wow. How can you do that? Stop it. Just get really comfortable. So I would say to anyone, some top tips from me is get comfortable. Practice with your friends. Practice with yourself. Just take videos of yourself. You can go on Zoom and record yourself having a conversation. One of the other things is don't look at yourself. So as we're talking now, I'm on the screen, but I'm the little box. You're the big box. And it, you know, if you feel uncomfortable already, having yourself as a big version next to the person you're talking to can be really distracting. So if you do feel uncomfortable, until you start getting comfortable, make yourself the little box, or put it on. If you've got the capability on Zoom, you certainly can. Is pin the speaker. Yeah. So the person who's speaking will always be pinned. Now, if you're the one who's uncomfortable, don't pin yourself. Whatever you do, because you're just going to see yourself and you're going to get more and more uncomfortable. So it's really about practicing. And actually, you know, if you're not comfortable, you don't feel comfortable and don't like the way you look or speak on video, get over yourself. Stop it, because this is here to stay for a while.
Yeah, it's absolutely here to stay. I always thought it was, like, video was pretty big, right? It existed in February. It's not a new invention, right? But I know it's been expedited, and it's probably been expedited to corners of the workforce who wouldn't really need it for a few years' time.
Yeah.
It is here. Like, my trick is to look at this little, I'm pointing at my webcam, people who are audio, put this little 6 millimeter thing, because I used to like especially in groups, like go around the screen and try and look at the person, but it looks like you're not doing it. You're all over the place, right? So I want to delve a bit deeper into facial expressions, I think, and then into advertising. So I remember back in the workshop that you delivered, that I was in, you were talking about different facial expressions and what they mean and stuff. And for those who've not seen me in real life, I am all face. I don't have any hair, technically. So I'm only face and quite expressional. And I felt, as Adrian was explaining about facial expressions, I felt very conscious of my face going, I wonder what I do. And I'm pulling faces again now, which is again terrible for audio, but you know. I've seen it now on firsthand on some being involved in more networking online. Some people, when a speaker's on, right? If you're in a normal conference room or a seminar room, right? You're facing the front. You can only really see back of people's heads and the speaker, right? So it's not too bad. But on Zoom or Teams, you can see everybody's face.
I know.
And some people are not as interested, like visibly, as they should be. So can you explain in words without kind of visible face things, like what are the no-nos of facial expression, if people can recognize that?
Okay.
The grimaces.
So there are no bad expressions, but all expressions give us information about what's going on for a person. And as I say in all my posts and videos and trainings, you're never a mind reader. If you see what someone's going on in someone else's face, it doesn't necessarily mean you know what's going on in their mind. You just know that something's going on for them. You don't know why they're showing that expression. So that's where, you know, you'd have heard me in the workshop talk about the use of questions. That's where questions come in, absolutely key. Gentle questions this as well. This is not, I just saw dislike on your face. Why are you pulling a face of dislike? It's more a question of, is there something more you'd like me to deliver? Is there something more you'd like to talk about? Is there something that's bothering you? So it's gentle questions to understand what's going on for the other person. But in a meeting, one of the things I also do is sit in meetings for my clients to analyse what's going on both ways. And it's not about getting one over the other person. It's about really creating a communication that everyone's happy with and a win-win. Because, you know, you can be in a negotiation meeting and one person saying, yeah, I'll do that. And then you just saw disgust on my face there. That person has no intention of doing that. And I will say to them, you know, is there anything that would make this easier for you to do? Just to help open the communication up, because they're not saying how they really feel. So one of the ones I look for a lot is disgust, which is the nose wrinkling. I'm doing it on video, but if you're at home and you've only got audio, it's the wrinkling up of the face, and it's called like scrunch. And that is either outwardly focused or inwardly focused. If it's outwardly focused, and you'll only judge this by context, if something's just been said and you think, oh, that was a nose wrinkle, they didn't like that, it's then the time to start exploring what would be better. It's interesting to say, subconsciously, we pick up these expressions as well. So you might not be a face reader, you might not know, but you're doing it all the time. We're all doing it all the time. We're instinctively reading other people's faces. It's just something we're born with. Some people are better than others because they turn it on and really choose to notice what's going on. Another expression I would really urge people to look out for is fear. So the fear expression is the lips stretch back towards the ears, not a smile. It's kind of like this. And you'll hear that if you're on audio, you might have heard that intake of breath. Now, on some of my videos, so I'm doing regular videos every day, I kind of start my videos with that. And it's because I'm a bit nervous. I don't mind saying that at all. If we all get nervous. As I go on, I relax and, you know, my breath changes because I become more relaxed. But looking out for signs of nervousness or anxiety, people need reassuring. You know, depending on what context you're in, a simple question, is there anything more I can do to help you? That reassures the person and gives them then the spot to open up and talk about how they're feeling or what more they need. You know, in a HR situation, if you're seeing high levels of fear on someone's face, they need more support probably. There's something going on where they feel out of control. So how can you help them to be more in control? One of the things I talk about all the time is genuine smiles and fake smiles. Now, you see this so much on Zoom and Teams and all the other video calls. There are fake smiles going on all around the world, millions of them every second. And actually, if you want to be successful in your business, you need to know the difference between a genuine smile and a fake smile. Because if your client or potential client is giving you the fake smiles, they're not really happy. They're probably not going to become a client. And if they're already a client, they're probably not going to be a repeat client, because they're not genuinely happy. So if I get to the end of a meeting and I'm not seeing genuine smiles, what more do I need to deliver? What more do you need from me? What more would you like to know? Is there anything else I can add to this? Because I want that genuine smile, because they're going to recommend me and they're going to give me repeat business. So that they're some of the key ones that I think are really important. And, you know, I'm going to get on my soapbox now, Tim. Stop me if you don't want me to carry on ranting. People say to me, well, that's a really interesting skill you've got there. And that's really nice. And it's almost like, that's nice to have. No, this is vital stuff, people. This is really, really important. I can't stress this. And I'm not just saying it because I want more business. It's nothing to do with that. In your everyday life, if you don't understand people's body language and facial expressions, even to a small degree, you're missing a lot of communication and you're probably having a bit of a difficult time of living. Yeah. Because it's really important to know how other people feel, and also let other people know how you feel. That's how we build empathy. That's how we build our communication skills. So rant over.
No, it's a good rant, actually. And as I was listening to you there, I was scribbling notes in my notebook so I don't forget of what to bring up. But you were on using an example of in meetings and conversations and stuff like that, something that me and Steve, who my co-host of the other part of the podcast, talk about a lot is the skill of facilitation.
Yeah.
Right. And we both do kind of similar kind of works with groups of people and workshops and leadership groups and stuff like that. So we've been aware of the skill of facilitation for a while.
Yeah.
But I think it's been one of those things that have been expedited a little over this period of time, because it's especially online.
Yeah.
I had to learn facilitation online like quicker because, because you know, I got lucky enough to get paid to do that sort of work. Right. Yeah. But I think it's a leadership skill. I think it's certainly a sales skill, even a marketing skill. Like, so if your job is customer facing and that customer facing is in this little portrait window, right, you need to understand kind of facilitation. You need to understand that you have to recognize when people are dropping off, right? In real life, it's pretty easy because they've got the phone out or they're eating biscuits or like, you know, there's physical signs that you can see. But we know life happens on Zoom. So beyond the laptop screen, there could be all sorts of stuff in real life happening, right? So it's easy to be distracted, I want to say, but that makes it the role of facilitation even more important. And I think what you were saying about it's critical to be able to have to communicate.
Yeah.
But not just through your words, right? Yeah. And there's an amazing guy. I've seen a couple of his TED Talks and called David J.P. Phillips. I don't know if you've come across him. He's a Swedish guy, right? And he's very funny. And he's on about, he's done a breakdown of keynote speaking, right? It's pretty much it, but any kind of presentation. And he's broke it down into like 110... non-verbal communications, basically. And one of them that you reminded me of when you were talking then was the Duquesne smile, which is like it's hard to explain in words without for audio, but I'll put the links to David's TED Talks in there about a Duquesne smile, which is the greatest end to anything. Like, it portrays real happiness. So these skills, right, these communication things that you're on about facially are learnable, right?
Absolutely, totally. Most people do it automatically. But what they do when they get into a meeting and they're on Zoom or they're distracted is they forget to just be observant. You know, when I do my workshops, people come afterwards and go to me, you'll never guess what I saw today in Tesco. You'll never guess what this, never guess what that, what I just saw. Like, it was always there. You just didn't notice it and you didn't pay attention to it. You know, one of the things you can do right now to start training yourself to develop your own skills is watch television, turn the sound off and just watch it with no sound, and then make some judgments about what you think is going on. Then replay it with the sound on and just see if you're right and start to develop your own skills. It's really simple to start doing, because most people, not everyone, most people have got a good degree already of, you know, when you say to them, what do you think this is? They'll go, oh, that looks like they're really frightened or they're scared of something. Spot on. Absolutely. So you've got this skill. You just don't turn it on. So that, you know, that's another rant of mine. Turn this on when you're in your conversation, particularly important conversations, personal or professional. Switch it on, but use it with kindness. Today's World Kindness Day. Use it with kindness, because you can beat people around the head with this skill. When I came back from training 10 years ago from the University of California in America, my husband threatened to divorce me. He was like, will you stop bleep analysing me? Because all of a sudden, I was really focused on what I could see, and it was like loads more information that I'd been picking up for many years beforehand, but it can get really annoying. So it's, you've got to be really careful how you use a skill, and it's very, very gentle, because you do, it kind of develops you into a superpower. You know, I can be speaking to somebody on the train I've never even met before, and we're having a little bit of a chat, and we've just started talking about something completely innocuous, and the next minute they've told me their whole life story. And I don't know how it happens or why it happens, but it happens quite regularly. And it's just because I think I've got really good communication skills, so people feel they can open up to me. We've all got these skills. We've all got them. We just choose not to switch them on or not to develop them. And I would urge everyone to do it. It's really important.
It is really important. And I like a word that's come to the fore quite a lot recently, especially over lockdown, and maybe because of lockdown, but probably because of all the other things that have happened despite COVID in the world this year, like all the other things, right? The word is empathy,
yeah,
right? and showing empathy to others, like who are, I just wrote down in my book, because what something you referred to a while back in this conversation was, because people might not be as comfortable when you were referring to the fear, the fear smile, for want of a nicer expression, but the fear expression, because you could facially take that as, oh, they didn't like what I was saying, I've done something wrong, I've scared them off, I've especially in a business context, right, or I've said something that's made them repel, but they just might not, they might have flicked screen and saw themselves looking a bit, whoa, because the kids have gone crazy, right, so it takes that other level, right? You need, it's good, I would say, to recognize that sign, but then you've got to somehow prove that your initial assumption's right. And that's a thinking process, maybe, right? It's not just...
I call it a deducing process. What else could this mean? It's one of the things I'm quite passionate about. When you see something, don't automatically judge, you know what that means, because the triggers for all of us are very, very different. What might trigger happiness in me might trigger sadness in you, triggers disgust in somebody else, contempt in somebody else, fear in somebody else. So we've got triggers that are unique to ourselves. We're not all robots. It's about developing the skill of asking, what else could this mean? And trying to understand how it is from the other person's point of view. Not from your point of view, from their point of view. What's going on for them?
That's it. And that links you back to something you said about the power of questions as well. Like you, it's good to notice stuff, right? It's good to be aware, right? And be vigilant. But then what are the questions are? And it shouldn't be seen as a challenge, right? It should be empathetic. Yeah. It should be kind.
Absolutely, totally. It's like a rule I have, and it's an unbreakable rule. If I'm going to teach you this stuff, you're going to use it with kindness, or I'm not teaching you. It's an agreement I set up at the beginning of, and I did it at the workshop we were in. It's an agreement we have. This gives you the lasso of truth. You know what's really going on, and you can do a lot of harm with it, and you can really upset people with it. So it is, you know, sometimes they don't want to tell you how they're feeling, and for their own reasons, and that's fine. The fact is, you might know something's going on for them. Sometimes it's none of our business. It's not up to us to really dig sometimes, because they don't want to tell you. So it's about using really great empathy skills and really showing that human kindness that we all need.
Yeah, I think it is. And well, as you were just saying that then, I had commercial sales directors running through my mind, because I've had some interesting conversations with commercial sales directors who would love this tool. Like, and same with NLP.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, oh my God, I've got another weapon to use in this arsenal, which always makes me cringe a little, I think.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It's really about upping your communication skills to make your communications better between whoever you're interacting with. It's not about manipulating them at all. It's about upping the skills.
That's it. That's it, right? And I think let's go into communication, right? Let's go into communication in, because this is we've got marketing in the title of the podcast, right? So let's, I know you, one of the recent posts I've looked at yours was about advertising and facial expressions.
Yeah.
Give us a bit of an introduction or a diatribe about the use of facial expressions correctly within advertising and marketing, maybe.
So when done well and with thought and with an objective in mind, it can create 3 times more engagement. Now, I work with Bangor University and we've done some studies where we know in the lab and in real life that if you get the facial expression right in an ad, you're going to get 3 times more engagement or 3 times more conversions, more importantly. It's about using this information in advertising to meet the objective. What do you want to inspire in the person looking at your ad? So I put one on LinkedIn a couple of days ago. It's a Lloyd's ad that they created for, you might have seen this one, for mortgages. And it shows a picture of a young man sitting on a radiator, looking out of a window. But the wording below it says something about being an exciting time. Well, his facial expression at best was neutral. And neutral is not as bad as disgust or as contempt in this context, because at least you can put your own thoughts on what was going on a neutral facial expression. But there was no excitement in the picture whatsoever. Someone commented on the post saying, well, it is an exciting time. Yeah, but the picture should show that excitement in some way, even if it's just a really nice, genuine, great big smile, you know, still be sat on the radiator looking out the window. But where is there any excitement? It's a very gloomy picture as well. It's quite dark. So I'm passionate about making the words and the pictures and the call to action, making it all really relevant to who you want to attract, and then use the facial expressions to inspire the emotion. You know, I don't know if you've talked about mirror neurons on here, but when we look at mirror neurons, have you talked about mirror neurons?
No, we haven't.
Oh, I'm not going to start on that because there's a subject. All right. But
basically, we'll come back and do another one.
Okay. But mirror neurons, in a really short nutshell, go and look at it. There's loads of stuff out there. It's about when you see someone acting or behaving or feeling a certain way, it fires in your brain too. So the Cathedral City advert that did so well a few years ago, where there was, the posters were everywhere in television adverts, and it was people eating cheese on toast and go, and then cooking cheese on. Do you remember it?
Yeah.
I mean, cheese must have gone through the roof. It was a genius advert because we all went and had cheese on toast all of a sudden because we fancied it, but it fired in our brains. So if we are looking at pictures of people who are looking miserable when we're trying to sell an exciting product, it's a mismatch. And it's not a cognitive dissonant mismatch that goes, okay, I'll take some action. It's just like, oh, don't really get what they want me to do here. Well, ignore. Goodbye. So it's about, I've worked with some global brands on this, and I still have some global brands as a client, and the lack of objectivity that they sometimes come to me with, they were like, so what do you want the audience to feel? We don't know, we just want them to buy. If you're going to put pictures of people in there, people are going to take a message from those people. So you've got to be really clear about what the message is, how it ties in with the people, and then the call to action that you want them to take.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been in similar chats about advertising where either, like, brands seem to be, as a sweeping generalization, focused on one part of what makes a good advertising, right? Either the proposition, the words, right, is really good. Either the size of the brand, the brand asset, so the logo or the shape or something, right?
Yep.
Or the prominence of product or service or the creative styling. But never, like, I've seen some really good propositions from really good brands that are very well thought through, and then people whack a stock image on it. I'm like, what happened to that?
What are you doing?
But it's, It's that, like, one of my favorite workshop analogies actually is titled Billboard, my little a workshop test, where I go, okay, right, now you've got all this interesting brand and storytelling stuff, now pretend you've only got one billboard to get that message. Like, how good does that billboard have it have yeah. to be, and design the perfect thing, right? Everything from people, what are they wearing, are the yeah. people on it, is it just product, colors, shapes, like design, everything, because it's your first impression, right? It's we did another podcast earlier on with a lad called Johnny Press that we talked about shop windows,
yeah,
in relation to thingy, and now we're living through screens pretty much, right? Yeah. Everything is your shop window, right? That first impression counts, right? Yeah. So if you're advertising in the great wide world, the first impression counts, right? And if you're doing this like Zoom, your first impression counts. And that's where, you know, faces matter, don't they?
If you get it right, it goes into the people's long-term memories, which is what you want. So I worked on a project for a cigarette brand about 7 or 8 years ago now. And we were in a country where they hadn't had advertising on the television or billboards for quite a few years.
Wow.
And we said to the consumers, you know, what advertising have you seen lately? And they were naming the Marlboro Man adverts, because that man stuck in their long-term memory. They hadn't seen it lately. It hadn't been on television for years. It hadn't been on billboards for years. But if you get it right, it sticks. And it sticks for a long time. It's about really getting into that long-term memory, that if you want your brand association to go on that long, and most brands do, yep. most brands do. And that's why I say it's such a missed opportunity, because then, you know, the stock image they slap on, or no thought to what emotional content they're putting into the imagery and the words and the call to action, there's just that's such a big opportunity. Such a big opportunity.
It is. And I think, you know, I'm very human-centered in the work I do, right? I'm of that school of thinking anyway. So whenever, like, because I don't think products and services matter if you haven't bought the people connected to it.
Or
do you know what I mean? So I'm not, like, and there's a bunch of stuff that's fine, like milk. I don't need to be sold milk by a person, really. I know what milk is.
Yeah, you're going to buy it regardless.
Yeah, I'm going, I need it. I need milk. Right, yeah. it's just a thing. But if you're, you know, I know there's been a bunch of moves towards vertical video, like story yes. format,
yeah.
And even LinkedIn stories. Let's not go down that route. But anyway, let's stick with like Instagram, where it's good. But like that story format is inherently kind of behind the scenes, right? It's the real.
Yeah,
what person, really happened.
Yeah.
Right. It's the real view yeah. of the person. And I think, you know, there's faux pas normally, like the up the nose camera angle for some.
the double chin one.
Like, and it's, you know, that shop window, that little square that you put your face in, makes your face the most important thing. And I think it's probably where communication starts. Like, could I watch most of the videos with the sound off, if I'm honest?
So it
must be, you know, luckily some have captions on, but I'm not always in the mood to listen to people's words. I just want to see what, you know. But I think it's super important. Expedite, right, as that becomes more often, because we were talking just off camera, I think, that this way of life, this way of meeting, especially in larger groups, is going to continue, we reckon, for next year.
Yeah.
I know, but so where can people kind of start to learn this stuff if they don't know already? Obviously we'll link to you and all your
Thanks
stuff in the in the chats and things, but is there books or YouTubes or talks, or do you have any courses or anything?
So I do training courses. I prefer to do the face-to-face, but I don't have, though it is all online. But some of the books you should read if you're interested in this is about Dr. Ekman, Paul Ekman, and that's Ekman. One of the best, I'll show you on screen. I know people
have heard,
but this is Emotions Revealed. This is a great book. It's easy to read. Dr. Ekman was the pioneer of discovering this and how to bring it into a commercial aspect. I haven't got the other book, it's downstairs, but Dan Hill, Emotionomics, or Brand Strategies, and how to really up emotional content, using faces and using emotions in general to really change how people are feeling or attach that long-term memory, which is where brands want to be.
Yeah.
Another book that I love, Malcolm Gladwell, Blink.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant book. It's a great place to start, really start thinking about this.
Well, I think there's some great books there. I love Malcolm Gladwell one, but there's been, just to round off, it sounds like there's very much in the school of behavioural economics, like the work you do. What we've just been talking about fits very well into that. And there's been, you know, there's been some big strides made forward in that, in that space recently, especially in terms of marketing and brand, right? With like Rory Sutherland and Nudge Stock, which is the behavioural economics.
I love that.
It's really good, right? It's really
Have you read his latest book?
Alchemy. Yes.
Yeah, it's a good book. Good book.
It is good. And you know, people like Dan Pink and Chip and Dan Heath and Richard Shotton did The Choice Factory, which I think is a behavioural economics book. Like, so if you're, if this conversation was one of your first kind of touch points with this way of thinking, right, of being a little bit more scientific and human first instead of pushing product and service, right? You need to rethink your advertising and your billboards to move people, not move products and services, I think. And these books that Adrienne talked about and Rory Sutherland and Dan Pink are a good place to start. But
yeah, really good place.
The time is now, I think. I think this next age, whatever age means, few years, is going to become very behavioural economics, because it's the, you know, all the other science and technological movement of product and purchase and revenues is becoming a much more automated and software done. So it leaves us humans to do more human stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the more we get back to people, the better.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let's bring the people back. They never went anywhere. Let's just make sure we focus on them.
Brilliant. I think with that knowledge bomb, it's a good place to end. Why don't you let people know where they can best get hold of you and how to and where to find you and what you've been up to, and then we'll draw it to a close.
Okay. So my website, www.adriannecarter.com. Nice and simple. And I'm on LinkedIn, Adrienne Carter, Facebook, Adrienne Carter Limited, and Instagram, Adrienne Carter. So put my name into anything and I'll pop up somewhere, I'm sure.
Brilliant. Thanks very much. That was a really good conversation.
Thank you, Tim.
Okay, thanks everybody. That was Rebite number 9, a short and chewy conversation. We'll be back in early December with season 2 of the long form one. So watch out for that, and I'll catch you next time.